Hey, welcome back to another episode of the Telewellness Hub podcast. I'm Marta Hamilton, your host. And today we have the pleasure of having our guest on this show be a 2023 IDEA Personal Trainer of the Year and also a podcaster with one of the top 2% most popular shows, Dr. D Social Network. And so today's guest, Dr. Darian Parker, gets to join on and talk to us a little bit about personality development, behavior change, and exercise science. Dr. Darian Parker earned his PhD in sports education leadership with an emphasis in behavior modification from University of Nevada, Las Vegas. He earned his master's and bachelor's degree from James Madison University in kinesiology. Dr. Parker is the co-owner of Epic Leisure Management, LLC, the owner of Parker Personal Training, LLC, and the host of Dr. D Social Network podcast. Dr. Parker is a certified personal trainer through the NSCA. Welcome, Dr. Parker.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You know, and I should have confirmed prior to starting, what do you prefer to go by? Is it Dr. D, Dr. Parker, Dr. Darian?
Man, I get all those actually with people. Okay. I don't know. I think it's whatever the person wants to do. So I honestly don't care. It doesn't matter.
Okay. I'm asking because I realized as I had done your bio, there's just so much interesting background. I was so excited to talk with you and so grateful of your time being a guest, letting yourself host a top 2% podcast, and saw your name mentioned in many different ways. But kind of goes, I appreciate the openness to whichever way. I'm so interested in people who are dedicating their lives, as you are, to wellness work. And you're doing it from a perspective of an educational background. You're doing it from the perspective of client work, social broadcasting, awareness, and even creativity through things like poetry, I see. So before we dive into that, my first question for you would be, why do you do the wellness work that you do?
I think the biggest thing is I just really figured out pretty early that, you know, it's about the relationship building that you do with people. Fitness is a great platform for building relationships with people, especially with what I do with training. Is you're one-on-one with lots of people on a regular basis, and you're learning about them. You're building kind of this confidant relationship. You're expressing compassion. You're working on your listening skills. So I think fitness is a great way to build your personal, interpersonal skills with other people and doing that. So I always, early on, I got into it because I just wanted to build meaningful relationships and practice that. And fitness is a good excuse kind of for doing that.
Yeah, you know, you're so right. I think I finally stepped into a personal training for myself after I injured my ankle. I broke my ankle and I could not do any of the things I typically loved, but I wanted to be active and found a personal trainer. And although I went for the physical aspect, you're so right. There are so many intangible aspects of personal training. It's this person you trust. It's this person you lean on. You feel like they're encouraging you, supporting you. There's an accountability piece. So I could definitely see how that relationship piece is so essential, especially in today's age of some isolation and loneliness. There's so much connection in fitness. Even just going to a class, right? A class or with somebody. That's awesome. And you mentioned the personal development with the personality and just, I'm so curious because as a fitness trainer, I'm sure you are trained, your area of expertise is to really look at the physical, especially with the
kinesiology.
Kinesiology, which my husband had actually studied, but yes. Yeah, so with that component, and yet really you're focusing so much on behavior and personality. Can you share a little bit about that aspect of the work that you do?
Yeah. I think most training is emotional. I honestly do. I think people come in, the price of admission is exercise. But what I've learned over time and why I pursued my doctorate in this area was that we're trying to help people, you know, be the best version of themselves. And that's behavior change. How do you get someone to go from exhibiting a behavior that they don't want to do. Maybe in this case is they don't want to be sedentary, or, you know, they want to be more active, and then providing an intervention that will help them to create the desirable behavior that they want. And so whatever that is, that's either a subtraction or addition-based equation when looking at that. If I want to nudge somebody towards a behavior, I have to create, it's the book Nudge is really great about this. And Sunstein and Thaler, the authors of the book, behavioral scientists, they're really good about this. But in a sense that you have to have, like, create this choice architecture. And in that architecture, how do you get somebody to move off their spot? Because behaviorally, we will always default to what's easiest to do. So our default mechanism is what most everyone has, a default mechanism, whether that's like, hey, my default mechanism is I'm going to literally do nothing. That's what I default back to when I don't feel great, when I'm tired. You know, it could be a variety of different default mechanisms. So for me, I look at it and say, okay, how do I get someone to do this on a regular basis and make this a part of their lives and create enough margin in their life to do it? Because we're like in the productivity crisis age as well, where people are wanting to be overly productive and overly stimulated, often in avoidance of what's really happening in their lives. Sitting down and thinking about what you want to do with your life or what your life means is scary. It's extremely scary to people, because then it becomes this reflective process of, maybe I'm not where I want to be, and that's scary. So we fill that stuff up with all the junk in our lives, all the information, all the screen, all the scrolling, all the productivity. And so you have to create a margin in your life in order to have self-care, in order to take care of yourself. And with what I do, I would say probably the most powerful way to do that is to create an accountability mechanism, to create something that pulls you, an appointment, a person, a group, whatever it is that pulls you from that carousel you're on or your default mechanism that you're on for that. So that's easier said than done. But like, you hired a trainer, that's one of the most powerful mechanisms to create accountability, is knowing someone is waiting for you, that you have an appointment, maybe you have reminders for it. All these different things are nudges to help you move forward with that. And then also part of that is the personality development, is understanding that you are not set in stone. Your personality is not permanent. There's lots of great books about this, but I think a lot of times our culture, our society wants to put people into categories and say that, you know, these different personality tests, but most of them are not valid, by the way. They're just pop culture tests. They're fun, Enneagrams, things like that. It's, oh, you're a two, you're a three or four. You're actually not any of those. You exist on a spectrum of behavior and personality. You exhibit personality traits that sometimes exhibit themselves to be more outgoing in certain situations and more reserved in other situations, more open-minded to some things, less open-minded to other things. It's things like that. So it's malleable. Your personality is actually very malleable. So understanding that, you start getting the picture together of a person. It's like, okay, where is this person currently and how they exhibit these traits of openness, neuroticism, how and agreeability, all these things. And then understanding, like, how do I help move this person towards where they would like to be for that?
Man, you bring up so many good points. Even just the concept that we're malleable and that we do tend to, as society, get fixed on our category. Just, we know that neuroplasticity is real, right? And where we can rewire our brain, we can change our behaviors, our perspectives. And I love when you brought up that it can be an addition and subtraction equation, and that we live in a productivity crisis. It's almost like we've created like a division and an exponent and then like square it equation to create our margins and overcomplicated it. I actually bring that up sometimes, even in the wellness, health and wellness field, we can get really complicated about how to approach wellness and having to do all the things. So I love when you brought up how to get into just your margin and looking at that change. A personal question, how did you take into account accountability or find that margin for yourself, even in, for example, becoming, you know, certified trainer of the year? What did you do? What were some things that you did personally that you found beneficial?
Worked less. I would say big time. I would say that probably for the first 17 years of my training and running clubs and different things I was doing, I just worked a lot and I didn't have any margin. And I felt like I couldn't, like, maybe be the best. I couldn't devote a lot of time to self-improvement because of that. And so try to figure out, how can I create more time in my life, also put boundaries around my work life so that I could have the energy to contribute, meeting my colleagues more often, spending time with my family, and continue to have a viable career. So I mentioned this, you know, subtraction and addition. It's good to have not only a to-do list, but also good to have a stopping list. Like, what am I going to stop doing or do less so that I can create more energy and time in my life to do the things I want to do for that? And so I kind of think differently about it. Generally, I love being productive, but I also love doing nothing. And I think we have to get comfortable with doing nothing. A lot of people I talk to struggle with this. I was doing some lecture not that long ago, and I kind of mentioned this, and I heard a few people go, I can't sit still. I have to do something all the time. That's a huge red flag when I hear that. It's like there's a lack of comfort and silence. And that silence, little kids do this all the time. If you have a child, they start becoming philosophers. They're bedtime philosophers. As soon as you take all the stimulation away, they want to talk about everything and they want to get deep with you. It's because they're no longer distracted. You have subtracted their stimulation in their life. And now it's just one-on-one. And then all the thoughts they were putting away, they start coming to the surface. And this happens with adults. Adults are very afraid of their own thoughts. Like, kids are afraid in the dark. Adults are afraid of their thoughts. And when you're afraid of your thoughts and to confront and come to terms with your thoughts, you'll do almost anything not to feel that for that. And sometimes when you do take the time and create the margin and connect with your thoughts, or you meditate, whatever, then trauma starts to develop from meditation. Sometimes you're dealing with a lot of difficult things. So I think for me, it's just like working less, setting really hard boundaries. Like for me, like Fridays, I don't work past 12 o'clock p.m. It's a hard pass. Somebody wants to train past then, it's always a no. And I stick to that. I never train or work at all on Sunday. Never work on Monday mornings, afternoon. Like, it's a hard set thing. I will not be moved off of that. So that once you give an inch, you'll start it'll be two people, three people. The floodgates will open. So I think maybe surprising a lot of people, working less is actually been a big thing for me.
I love that you shared that, because, you know, in your bio, you can hear all of the things that you've done and all of the accomplishments. And what a great reminder to hear from you directly. Okay, you can do less in order to feel like you can do more, especially in the area of personal development, right? Because what I'm hearing is, if you don't have energy, you can't develop personally. And that's what happened in the first 17 years you mentioned. You know, there was no time for that personal development.
I think it happens all the time with people. They just spend too much time being busy. And then once you have a family, you know, the cup gets real full very quickly. So I think it's, you know, that self-awareness, reflection, creating boundaries, is really critical. Like, you read my bio, it looks like I'm doing everything under the sun, but I'm not doing it all the time. And I'm making sure that, I think the other thing is like editing your life. I think you got to edit out stuff that doesn't contribute to your well-being. And for me, like 7 years ago, I edited out completely social media, all of it except for LinkedIn. I have not had any of this, and I don't miss any of that stuff. I feel like logically, I said, okay, is this contributing for me personally to my well-being? And I thought, no. So it was very simple for me. And having my background, I was like, okay, it was easier for me because I had all the knowledge in the background. So I was like, okay, I made the jump to be like, I know this won't influence my business either because I know other ways to make business versus doing this. So just editing your life, again, that subtraction addition part is really good to think about.
Yeah, I love that, editing your life. I had written down time plus boundaries equals energy. You kind of mentioned that. Yeah. And then just subtracting, what do you have to edit out to increase your time? What do you have to say no to enforce those boundaries for that energy? You know, you mentioned kids. Do you have kids? Are you a parent?
Yeah, I have a 12-year-old. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I related so much when you said that about the go to bedtime. All of a sudden, I mean, you can have conversations about the universe and the meaning of life. Yeah, yeah. How do you, as someone who has so much specialized experience and you give lectures in the area of this, how do you apply that as a parent? Just to be able to. It sounds like what an amazing opportunity to gift your children at an earlier age this concept of being able to create boundaries, to look at what's good for your being, like you said, and just really look at this personal development. Any suggestions that you have that you apply as a parent, maybe not in business, maybe not in specific goal settings when it comes to our fitness, but maybe that emotional wellness and mental wellness that we can influence our parenting.
I'm not going to lie, I struggle with this with parenting. I don't want to present something that's not true. Like, parenting is the ultimate test in life, I feel. Like, it's like you're raising an alien. I mean, you really are. Someone came here and they have no clue about your culture, customs, and they don't know anything about how the world works. And it tests you on a regular basis. So I definitely try to implement the things that I know, but sometimes I fail. Honestly, it's just the truth. I fail at it. And I'm always very calm. I tend to I look at it philosophically and being calm and getting my point across and listening. But, you know, you get pushed to the edge, I think, in parenting regularly. So even the person who has the best education about it, I think, is going to struggle with it. And a lot of my clients are brilliant people. They're top of their industry and stuff, and they are struggling being parents, you know. So I think that's more relatable, which is like the struggle, and you try to implement different strategies. But I feel like children, they always like test the strategies. They're always like evolving, and they're always like, I know a different way around this strategy my dad's doing to me. And I was like, always happens. And I'm like, man, I got it. This is the greatest test, I swear.
I'm so glad. It's so refreshing that you share that, because I often, you know, my background is as a therapist and I used to work with kids, and I'm told parents like, look, I have read all the books, I've done the trainings, I've done the continuing education. But when it comes to actually as a parent, I know this struggle is so real. It is a challenge. And I imagine your experience working in physically challenging experiences helps foster kind of the personality, like, okay, I can be calm, I can approach this in a really kind of dogmatic way, or just kind of rational, or explain, or listen, right? Listen, because I'm sure there's a lot of listening to your body. What's your body doing? What's your body telling you that you can apply? So I think that's really wonderful that you can kind of mirror some of that into parenting. I think you brought up parenting being challenging. I think ultimately so much in our human existence is about confronting challenges and discomfort and navigating our way through that.
Yeah, most definitely. I've never been afraid of discomfort. I run towards it. That's definitely a quality for me. I look at arguments as propulsion. Like, if done properly, they always pull you forward if they're done properly. If it's emotionally led, they're very hurtful. But if they're done in a way that's respectful and civil It could be jet fuel for it. And I was recommending to people, you know, people are on the internet, they're sifting through all this information, all this self-help and stuff. And I always recommend that people spend a lot of time learning about philosophy. And I never hear anyone talk about this. It's always other versions of behavioral science and stuff, like take philosophy courses, read about philosophy, the history of philosophy. Philosophy is a great way to learn how to argue with people because it teaches you the steps of how to be calm, how to provide factual information, how to listen. I took 3 philosophy courses, one in my bachelor's, one in my master's, one in my doctorate. And each one of those taught me how to be a very good communicator, a very good arguer of information, and a huge emotional regulator, how to regulate my emotions when I speak with people and not be triggered by everything that comes my way. I don't get that. Like for me, it's like, okay, it came to me, let me process it, let me evaluate it, let me be calm, and let me respond for that. So we would always do these exercises in class where you get up with another person and you would argue your point, and then you would also argue points you didn't believe in as well, like for that. And I thought that was a very interesting exercise. Once you argue something you don't believe in, it makes you think about that a bit more and more analytically. So I would say something to like start looking up more of to help in your life, look up philosophy courses, classes, the historical value of philosophy, just all those things, humanism, naturalism, hedonism, what all these different things, what are different philosophies in life? And it's also good every 10 years is to write a paper, a philosophy about your life. What do you believe about your life? What are you doing in this part of your life that you want to do, you would like to do, and what do you not want to do? And then compare those every 10 years and go, look how different you are over time for that. So a lot of self-reflection, evaluation. What is your philosophy when you're 20 about life, when you're 30, when you're 40? I guarantee you'll be very different. And it's good to reflect on that.
Yeah, this concept of self-reflection, I love that question. What do you believe about your life? Bringing it back to earlier, you mentioned how distracted we are as a society, whether it's all the information, all the social media. It's hard to self-reflect. And if we're not self-reflecting, are we really looking at our beliefs and our goals to develop and to change? You know, I saw a statistic that it looks like it around New Year's, the majority of the U.S. population made, you know, New Year's Eve resolutions and goals, and only about 8% of the population carried it through the first month. Any insight for people when it comes to having the intention of change, having the intention of development? I'm sure you see people come across, you know, maybe hitting a wall or having a challenge and kind of carrying it through. You gave really great suggestions with studying philosophy and knowing that we're malleable and looking at your time and your boundaries and your energy and not sticking ourselves into a category, right? Like, no, well, I am this way, so I won't change, so I give up. Any other recommendations or insight from your past experience and training and background in this area of helping people get back up and keep going, right?
Yeah, I think like, especially with the New Year's resolutions, it's one of the reasons they fail is that people haven't come to terms. This sounds bad, but people have not come to terms with what they're not doing well. Like they really haven't sat and thought about it. They just go, I'm going to change this. I'm going to start doing this now. But they haven't actually reflected upon what's happening. That undesirable behavior, haven't reflected on it, come to terms with it, made peace with the fact that, and actually said to themselves, I'm not doing well. Like, I need to fire myself. I need to fire myself because I've been trying to do this and I keep not doing this well. So I need to give myself the pink slip and say, I just can't do this. And all the clients that have been with me for many, many years, they're all like that. They all will always tell me, I just came to the point and I was like, I just know I'm not going to do this. I've come to peace. Come to terms with that. I will not show up unless you're here. That's not a weakness. That's just admitting something that you are struggling with. And I think people just skip that part and go, I'm gonna go to the gym. I'm gonna do this or do that, instead of actually thinking about your thoughts for that. And so I'm a big proponent of like thinking about your thoughts and designing your environment. Most people don't design their environment. They just exist in their environment and let the environment influence how they live in the world, instead of saying, I'm the architect of my environment. How do I want to live? Everything from the minute you wake up, who do I want to be today? Who am I today? Every day, do that exercise. Wake up and go, who am I going to be today? How am I going to act today? How am I going to treat my family today? How am I going to treat my coworkers? How will I exist in this space the rest of this 24 hours? And just do it every day. Most people don't do that. So their environment is controlling them instead of them designing and controlling their environment.
I love that. But the architecture, you being able to design, kind of goes back to what do you believe about your life, and even being able to do it for the next 24 hours and your environment around you. Dr. Darian Parker, I'm so grateful that you were able to come on here. I found myself kind of a fangirl moment in the beginning, twisting up my words, but how can people connect with you? I know a lot of people maybe they already are listening to your podcast, but how can people connect with you?
I think the easiest way is through LinkedIn, my professional media. Just I'm on there. I'll respond to any messages and stuff on there. Email, I'm a big proponent of email. DarianParker@gmail.com. You message me, I will get back to you very quickly. I really am a big proponent of respecting people's time and making sure that I get back to them in a timely manner. So those like are more direct ways to contact me. And then I'm just learning more. If you want to learn more about me, my website's good, drdarianparker.com. Spell the doctor out. And then you would learn just all about my different interests on there. And then my podcast is on there, which I'm not doing as much these days because I subtracted some time from that. I was like, I want to have time to do other things. I need to subtract some of this time for that. But there's a gigantic amount of episodes, like almost 700. You can learn all about me and all the people I connect with there and my philosophy about life and fitness and a variety of different things.
Well, Dr. Parker, thank you so much. I am so grateful for your time. What you said is true. I connected kind of randomly out to you. I had been listening to your podcast and you responded right away. And I'll always be so grateful for that connection and your time. And thank you so much for being a part of our wellness journey.
Thank you so much for having me here. I appreciate it.